as you mentioned, Sue is, I don't think many would argue she's easily one of the best players to have played the game. And you complement her with Lauren Jackson. You've got, two of the most dynamic women's basketball players of all time. How much dialogue do you have with them, or how much, what's the communication like in terms of what they can input into what you guys are doing and how you're doing it, maybe changes throughout the course of a season?
Well, obviously I had a lot of dialogue with Sue. She thinks the game and continually thinking of the game. And now she's amazing. Her mind just is working 24/7. We'll be in the middle of practice and she'll say, "Don't you remember, 3 years ago in this game and this possession, this happened?" And I mean, it's just amazing to have somebody like that. But that's one reason why, she's such a great player and so sharp, is the fact that she's got a tremendous mind. Lauren, on the other hand, she's just a basketball player. I mean, she's got a tremendous work ethic and can score. She can score multiple ways and is a tremendous athlete and sort of a, in all honesty, freak of nature. I mean, she's 6'6", can run the floor, probably the best defender in the league. One of the top two or three scorers in the league, and just has tremendous instincts for the game. But I will have a lot of dialogue with Sue, and I'll have dialogue with Lauren, when she wants to have dialogue. A lot of times she just wants to play. But she'll also come to me with some ideas and thoughts. And obviously they've played enough basketball. They understand the game extremely well, and I'm always receptive to hearing what they have to say.
Now curious, we've got quite a number of college coaches who join us now for the call now that their season's over, and similarly some of the high school coaches who are on the call have, they're fortunate to have some really strong players, but also bright players. How do you challenge a player like a Sue Bird, who's got a high basketball IQ, who's been around the game for a long time? How do you continue to get the best out of a player like that?
Well, I think there's two kinds of talented players. I think there's a kind of talented player like a Sue Bird and Lauren Jackson that don't really have to be motivated. They're self-motivated. They challenge themselves on a daily basis. They're prideful enough to where, they understand what the standards are and what their potential is, and they strive to get that. But I also think the majority of talented players aren't self-motivated. So I think you have to be creative on how to do this. I know one thing that we do that I think sort of plays into this. We do this for a variety of reasons, but this is part of it. Our season is so compact that once we start the initial games, we may have 1 or 2 weeks through the season that we have enough time to have quality practice. So what we try to do is try to keep our players as rested and fresh as possible during the season. And one way to do that is we have a men's practice squad that comes in and every day and plays with us. And they're made up of former college basketball players. And so they're a little bit older, they're mature, and they obviously are skilled, and they understand the game. And we keep those guys on the floor during the whole practice. We rarely practice against ourselves. And what that does is it challenges our players every possession in practice. They're playing against bigger, stronger people, skilled people. So they have to, to perform well, they have to really compete and hook up every possession. The second thing it does, especially for some of our people that get big minutes in games, is we can sub them out and not have them hit a lot of reps during the course of practice to wear them down. So we sort of try to, do that for a variety of reasons, but it does help challenge, our team on a daily basis. And I just think you have to think of creative ways to challenge a talented individual. I do understand that in sort of the high school setting, and probably even in some college setting, when you have one standout player, it may be tough to challenge that individual every day. And so being creative and having an open mind on how that might happen is important, because you you want that one player to improve. And I do know the younger your ages that you're coaching, that a lot of times you spend, 90% of the time with 10% of the players, and those players are going to play about 5% of the time. So, you don't want to get caught into that. So you have to keep focusing on the people that are going to, get a lot of your playing time and find ways to challenge those individuals.
Excellent. I can empathize with the role of a men's practice player in the WNBA. Actually, back in 98, I was on the Detroit Shock men's scrimmage team, and it gave me some great insight into the quality of that player and also how great players think, and also looking at the other end, how important it is to be motivated as a fringe player trying to crack a WNBA roster.
Yeah, it's a good situation. I mean, it helps our team without question.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I would be remiss if not to say congratulations on the WNBA draft. You've added several talented pieces to the puzzle. None better than that first round pick of Jasmine Thomas from Duke. Talk to me a little bit about what it's going to be like in terms of these young players now trying to transition into the WNBA and entering into training camp.
Well, it's difficult to make a roster. I think there were a few first round picks a year ago that ended up getting cut or not will end up getting cut this year. It's just, it's very tough. And I guess the best way to sort of paint the picture is in college, the players are playing against people from 18 to 22 years old, basically. And every year, a quarter of those individuals are going to graduate. So there's always openings, and there's sort of a transition. People move up the ladder. Well, in our league, they're playing, the individuals are from 22 to 35, 36 years old. And rarely do any of the players self-retire. Most of them, if they retire, they're sort of forced out of the league. So it just creates a very competitive situation. The probably the salary cap and the rookie salary scale is probably helped save a lot of the younger players, giving them opportunities. But there are so many good players that aren't in our league right now, and it's not because of anything other than there's just not enough room. So for college players that aspire to be playing in the WNBA, the best thing that can happen to them is to go to a team where it's a good fit, not necessarily go to the best team or the worst team. It's to go where there is a need and a fit for them. From our standpoint, Jasmine, there could be a fit for her. And it'll be interesting to see, how she comes in and plays. But I will also say this, that just because she's our first-round pick, other than maybe taking a hit in the media if you end up cutting her, she's going to have the same opportunity as any free agent that we may sign. We're trying to win games and trying to put the best product on the floor and trying to put the best team together. And we'll do that, any means that we can, whether it's our first pick, second pick, third pick, a free agent that we might obtain in some kind of way. So, there's nothing guaranteed to anybody just because they're first pick in the draft. They have to come in and earn a spot. And, we have a good team. We have a team of veterans. And not only will it be difficult for her to make the team or any of the rookies or free agents to make the team, but they also have to understand that, playing time might not be as available as what they're used to. And they have to find ways to stay, like we've talked about, stay self-motivated and staying in shape and being in condition, because we'll go through spurts during the year where in 2 weeks we may practice once or twice just because of travel and games and those types of things. So they have to be self-motivated to stay in shape. So when they do get their opportunity, and everybody does get their opportunity at some point in the season. That's the thing that I've always told players, no matter what level I've coached at, is some point in the season you're going to get your opportunity. Now, the thing is, are you going to be ready for that? Mm-hmm. So we tell our people the same thing. They have to stay in shape. They have to stay sharp. They have to know the scouting report. They have to really be on top of things. So when their number is called, that they're ready to perform.
Yeah, it's a great thought. I heard one coach say, everybody gets their opportunity, but their opportunity may not come in a game. Your opportunity may come in practice. So you always have to be ready. Interesting one. I wanted to ask you before I open it up to Lindsay, who's getting a number of questions coming online, which is great. So if you do have some questions for Coach, please do submit them. We've got quite a few who've come in. Coach, wanted to say from your perspective as head coach and working with your coaching staff, what's your focus going into training camp?
Well, we have a couple spots that need to be filled. So we're really going to focus on training camp of solidifying our roster going this season. Obviously, we want to create as competitive of a training camp as we can. And then we have a group of players that we know will play our quality minutes, and we have to get them ready to play, from opening night on. And a big thing for us and most teams in our league is the health issue. We want to be sharp and be ready, but we have a long season ahead of us, and we want to have our quality players playing in as many games as we can. So keeping them healthy and rested and focused is very important.
Now, there are a lot of coaches on the call who don't have an opportunity and have never had an opportunity to attend WNBA practice. From the standpoint of a practice plan, generally speaking, how much time are you spending on, if any, fundamental skills versus, where do you initiate your practice? You mentioned you're a defensive coach. Do you start there? Do you start with your offense? What does a practice plan look like, or the transition through training camp into preseason?
Well, believe it or not, I found that we spend probably more time on individual skill work now than we ever did, no matter what level we were coaching. We basically, our day starts this way. We usually practice from 11. Our real practice starts at 11 o'clock and goes till 1:30 or so. And if it's in the season, it'll be much shorter than that. But training camp will go for about 2.5 hours, maybe get up to 3. But we only go one time during training camp, because we want the hours that they put on the floor to be quality time. At 10 o'clock, though, we have what we call pre-practice, and all the coaches are on the floor, and that's the time that we spend working with individuals on their skill work, or maybe in small groups. We might be working on pick and roll situations, or screens away from the ball, or our post offense, or it could be a variety of things. We'll decide from day to day what we're going to work on, but we do spend an hour from 10 to 11 o'clock on individual skill work. Sometimes, there'll be individuals that we will work with every single day. Other times, like a Sue Bird, we may only go once or twice a week with her. But it's also a time where you can sort of see who the players are. The good players will come in and use that time on their own, get their shots in and do those types of things. They'll have a routine that they go through. So we do that from 10 to 11. Then 11 o'clock, we usually have a team meeting or a film session in the locker room, which will go from anywhere to 10 to 20 minutes. And then we come out on the floor and we start out by working on some offense versus no defense, and just working on our timing and things of that nature. Go right into our stretching after we're warmed up, and then come out and do another series of fundamentals, some basic shooting, some ball handling, some passing, some catching, and those types of things. And then we'll flow right into offense. And we usually try to get most of our defensive things done early in the practice, and we'll focus on our team offense late in the practice. But we also will go change that around a little bit. We do a lot of small group stuff. I'm a firm believer on team defense, that we do a lot of 3-on-3 team defense, because it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the defense. It's difficult to guard a large area of the floor 3-on-3. It's a huge advantage for the offense. So we do spend a lot of time defensively working, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. And then offense, you know, we'll break our offense down. We'll do some action shooting where we'll, whether it's, you know, on ball screens, away from the ball screens, post touches, you know, one-on-one isolations. We'll do that and choreograph some of that and just shoot repetition type shots out, you know, out of, you know, two, three, four different actions.
Okay.